Welcome to Footnotes, a podcast for students, by students, breaking down the law and all its complexities, one chat at a time. If you're a dedicated listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, then I hope you enjoy your time with us. My name's Justin, and I'll be your host for today. In 2019, international education contributed over $40 billion to the Australian economy. The state of this figure is much maligned, not only because of how much it has dropped in the past 2 years, but because of the way in which this understanding of international education places burdens and troubles on the students who come to our shores in search of furthering their lives. We put up so many barriers and distractions which prevent us from understanding international students as they really are, a community that cares for its own, that lobbies for change, and that has, and will continue to, work incredibly hard in the pursuit of its goals. This episode I spoke to Khan Tran. Khan is a current law student who balances his studies with volunteer work for the City of Sydney as an international student ambassador. We spoke about his personal experience in moving to Sydney, some of the specific issues which have emerged out of the pandemic, and the work that grassroots and government organisations do in emphasising student well-being and livelihood. I hope you learned something from this chat, as I sincerely did. As always, enjoy the episode and stay safe during lockdown. Khan, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Even though right now we're all in, at least in the city of Sydney, we've been locked down at the moment, but keeping well. Just did some, I guess, more creative work, more creative stuff going on about planning for the next semester and also doing an OE unit. But otherwise, other than that, I'm keeping well, staying safe at home, so finger crossed.
Did you have any plans for, like, I guess lockdown interrupted a bit of our plans, but were you planning to do anything within the period?
Yeah. So in the next 6 weeks, as I said before, I'll be balancing basically some, because I'm doing an intensive, two intensive units during the winter holiday break. So those are just the OE requirements to get that out of the way. The second is I'm contributing to Descent for 2021. So working with my editor on that. And also planning a few things with other souls, the two souls committee that I'm in right now, international and queer as well, and have been doing in the past week and then upcoming, because I'm also an international student ambassador with the City of Sydney. We have delivered two events within the past few months, one which was just last Saturday. So that was actually 2 days ago, and planning more for the coming semester, even though most of those things will be online. Let's see how COVID pans out, but we have plans to go.
I'm going to start us off with a couple of questions about sort of the international student experience and kind of welfare concerns. I think especially in the COVID situation that has started, I guess, in 2020 and has, I guess, reemerged in 2021, even though we thought that we'd gotten a little bit over it. Law school's a bit of a culture shock to many domestic students. And I guess speaking from the perspective of a domestic student, it's additionally really hard to conceptualize what that must be like for a person who moves from another country, who moves from one dominant culture to another, and then has to juggle all of those adaptations at the same time. So can you speak to me a little bit about what that's been like, you know, for yourself? And maybe if you have maybe chatted to some other people about this, what it's been like for some other people as well?
Yeah, that's actually is an excellent question. And I guess I'll start from my personal experience and then I'll proceed on to generally what I've observed from my friends, especially working with in student activism as well. From my personal experience, so just to give some backgrounds, I kind of identify as a cross-cultural kid because I grew up pretty much all my life in Vietnam, went to international school, then came over to England to study for high school, and now I'm in Australia. So I've been moved around different cultures for quite a bit already. But I guess my experience coming to Australia was, I guess the biggest element of a culture shock for me was socially. In terms of language, I have very little issues, but it's really the cultural elements in terms of navigating around social conversations. So for example, what are the first five questions that I might may hear from someone going into like a conversation? Because, you know, I came in as a first year, actually as a mature first year student, questions such as, oh, where do you go to schools? Those are very, very common because people create connections that way. And that's perfectly natural. As an international student, I guess when I say I went to high school, for example, in England, the conversation doesn't flow as as say two domestic students will continue on rather. And so I guess that took a little bit of adjusting because I encountered that somewhat before back in England, but that was less intense because in Sydney, one of the things that really stood out was how the UCIT community, not just law, but also the UCIT community, have a lot of students from the same city. And so it's very natural to network that way. But yeah, I guess those took a bit of time. So basically I navigated that through being patient, just building my relationship basically from scratch, because I guess that's the thing that not only myself, but other international students will experience, which is starting from scratch, socially, not so much academically perhaps, but definitely from a social point of view. So we start from scratch, we build that, and then patience, I think, is pretty much key. I guess what I learned was, I guess, not viewing myself through in getting that patience as wanting to be liked by others as I would have done in high school, but more building it gradually because people need time to, you know, to get, because they're probably having a little bit of mini version of culture shock themselves because, hey, there's a Vietnamese boy here who traveled all over the place. I guess many of my friends have encountered that in one form or another as well.
For international students, there's sort of this ever-present shadow of like what poor academic performance might entail. And that's quite a challenging kind of idea. And that seems to create this nexus of lots of different factors. For example, things like adjusting to the law school's notorious marking, adjusting to things like remote study, which is really taxing, and a lot of innate personal factors like the drive for success, for the perfectionism, for going to another country and wanting to succeed there. And I just think from an outsider's perspective, that can lead to what appears to be a massive toll on like student well-being. So what does your experience in that nexus look like? And how might that nexus sort of conceptually affect people?
That's also a really good question as well, because I guess there, of course, in that when you actually frame really well that nexus of different factors, I guess one of the keys other than, say culturally dependent ideas, because I think culturally dependent ideals about what academic form constitute were always geared towards perfectionism, because international students, as you are, everyone I'm sure is quite aware, invest significantly financially, emotionally, and everything in coming to Australia. And so when we have that sticker put onto our academic life, well, not just academic life, but life here in general, then that creates a sense, I guess, of perfectionism. And I guess in dealing with this, it takes, and then not only with the law school, but just in general, so academic life in general. So everyone, for example, come here with different expectations of referencing system, and it takes time to adapt to it. And then even course planning as well, because law subjects have a slightly more rigorous way of continuing from each other. And so I guess in encountering and then not so much solving, but coping and then wrestling with this nexus of factors that creates a sense of perfectionism, then what I have found helpful is, again, building the sense of patience. Then really in the beginning, I remember when I first came here, first year, so that was just actually last year, I remember attending this webinar. This was actually when COVID first came over. That webinar was about tackling imposter syndrome. I remember it very well. That was actually the first time I hear it out loud. And they said, calibrate your expectation and say that when you build up your work, just take it as your work. So I guess when I work through my work and everything, I know that there will probably be imperfection. I can't rule them out because from writing an article in Honey, I know that there are things that I will not catch inevitably. And so I just work, I guess, I would frame it away from expectation, but more frame in terms of curiosity. So get passionate about the subjects that I'm interested in. So, you know, those list of cases and stuff, arrange them in terms of themes and semantics and stuff, and then get curious and then do my research that way so that the word expectation doesn't have really to come. And whereas on the broader range, my expectation would just be pretty much the deadline. There's a prescribed deadline for XYZ assignments, stick to that, rather than being all way too worried about every single word. And I guess just building through and getting engaged with life just outside of academics as well, because I'm talking about the general expectation of life here, because life in Australia for arts and international students is not just academic life. Even though that might be the expectation of so many school leavers, international student school leavers. I am one of the exception who is not a school leaver, who attend my first year as a school leaver. That was quite a while ago. But I imagine for those who are international students and who are school leavers for the first time, my advice would be to talk to your, not only your peers, but talk to your senior, so second year going above, law school's peers, and they will probably have things to say about expectation calibrating expectations, because those grades you achieve in the past, they are from very different, and this applies to domestic students as well. It's not just an international student phenomenon. And so just go around, enjoy life, and learn basically to calibrate your expectations, achieve your best, but take that work that you work on, I guess, as your best possible one, and don't think that it is not you.
I just want to move to this idea of almost like a well-being and health perspective, especially with the recent sort of guidelines around COVID and certain, you know, things that make action as a result of getting into contact with certain things. There's been a lot of discussion about some of the specific things that international students, I guess, need to do. And I wanted to sort of retroactively apply this to the idea of how international students navigate the healthcare system and how navigate ways in which, for example, they need to seek well-being and, like, I guess, specifically maybe mental health related issues, especially as a result of things like the lockdown, which disproportionately affects international students more than domestic students. Have you, you know, had any experience going through those avenues? Have you heard of people going through those avenues? Has the experience been necessarily negative, or have there been kind of improvements in the recent, I guess, months?
I guess I'll actually tackle this question from in terms of welfare and health, not only with myself, but also the broader international students' access to not only mental health care, but welfare. I guess I'll tackle first the idea of welfare when I come here. I guess in terms of tackling that word welfare, it's an all-encompassing concept. So imbuing, you know, academic stresses. I have a part-time work as well. I cannot go to my part-time work right now because we are not a non-essential business, and so we cannot really kind of go. But all those factors kind of come together, and knowing, for example, our health, our access to health is contingent, with a few exceptions. I do acknowledge that there are a few exceptions for some countries with bilateral agreements with Australia, such as United States and United Kingdom. But other than that, the vast majority of international students' health access is covered under insurance. The University of Sydney, for example, when I was admitted, the university recommended Allianz Global, Allianz Care now, that's their new business name, as their preferred insurance provider. And knowing that means we're not eligible under Medicare. We don't access health through Medicare. We access health through middlemen, so to speak. A very good middleman, has to be said. In terms of accessing healthcare and mental, and then subsequently mental health care, that is the way that we go through. And it's imperfect. And it is not only imperfect, but I guess, of course, the question being framed in terms of COVID, but I guess in the larger picture, even before COVID, there was always that nagging disparate relationship between access to healthcare and students' expectations before they come to Australia, because that's a document. It sounds quite reasonable, 100% being covered for public hospital admission, but there's the fine lines being written everywhere in the larger document. And so navigating that does conjure up some difficulties. So for example, a story from myself is understanding boat building as a concept. I remember the first time I got checked up by a GP in 2019 for a sinus issue. The hospital then sent me a bill. It was about $150. And then culturally, and then I guess my cultural expectations superseded my rational sense of actually, I had this insurance right here, but I wasn't too sure. And so I decided to pay upfront instead $150. And then I later find out I had to put a, I, what I was supposed to do was filing a claim to in the insurance, wait for a bit for them to reply. They will cover the vast majority of it with a very small gap fee instead. So I guess navigating that will take basically a small village effort because us as international students, when we come here, including myself, have very rosy pictures of life here in Australia. And navigating those small little things like how to pay for our healthcare when we need it. And then moving on to mental healthcare, this is probably one of the biggest issues for our access because other than the university's CAP services, which is six free sessions, those are very excellent services, but those tends to be less of those are more proactive approaches and require students to really, as it were, get clued up and then access it. But those who require, for example, more intensive interventions, and I have had and I've heard and I know a few people who required more intensive interventions, then those then the current insurance system doesn't quite work because what happens is then if someone requires either a more professional psychologist or psychiatrist, they will have to go through a GP. And then the GP will have to refer and they have to devise a men what they call a mental health care plan. And then finally, refer it to a psychologist who will then be able to advise a fee. Then that fee by then would be most of the time quite compulsory, quite better. So when I say psychologist and psychiatrist, this is somewhat distinguishable from CAS because this is more professional. By more professional, as in it's more regular rather than a dictated numbers of sessions, so to speak. You still the better fee to be paid, but it's a lot easier than, but it's a lot less than, say, going into a hospital because those can cost thousands of dollars. But there is massive work to do around that area.
I just wanted to pivot to the ISLA because I think this is a program which it appears not a lot of the domestic student body knows a lot about. And because of that lack of knowledge, they don't necessarily understand the interactions between international students lobbying or, getting, I guess, activism, but also formal policy done, and then the state government or the city, the local government. Can you just give us a little summary of what the ISLA is and what they do?
So just to give background, so ISLA, and we call it ISLA as an acronym, ISLA, it stands for the International Student Leadership and Ambassador Program. It is a basically a volunteering program with the devised by the City of Sydney local government. Just to give some historical background, the program was actually started by a lady, and she's actually quite excellent. She used to be an international student herself. Having traveled from Guangzhou and then coming over here and use experience as in local government to set up the program within the local council. The program has been running since 2013. It's an 18-month program where students form teams and then work to deliver different events. So far, so before COVID, I'm going to touch on how we have coped after COVID. But before COVID, our events would have been all in person. We'll deliver careers workshops, talks, and panels with our partner organizations who work within not only international student lobbying, but also partner services around international students. So some of these organizations involve Redfern Legal Center, who have been running a free international student legal service and referral program since I think as for quite a while now. They run an app as well called My Legal Mate since 2019 as well. The second are students studying New South Wales. So they are a government agency, but work in advocating the interests of international students. For example, they help really to submit, they were the one who submitted the international student quarantine plan that was announced just about a few weeks ago. Surf Life and Saving New South Wales, so that's water safety, so all kinds of different stuff. and students can get involved in local businesses. So basically offering the chance to work in a structured program, but also outside to get involved in the community. And also tours, say during Vivid and during different calendar events within the city.
So as an ambassador, what is your role within those initiatives that ISLA is a part of or helps organize or creates from the ground up?
So I was admitted in the 2019, the December 2019 intake. So I start from 2020 and my term in the program will end next year. And my role within it is a member of a smaller team called Orientate. So what our team of about six people do is devise events specifically at introducing students to services and organization that helps international or provide services to international students. So ranging from legal advice, so Redfern Legal Center, water safety, like Surf Life Saving New South Wales, or mental health, such as Radiant Australia. They actually do a fantastic job. They basically help students to navigate because, as I said before, with mental health access, Radiant, what Radiant, for example, offers is helping to bridge that gap to help students contact and refer students to psychologists and GPs who are more, who are quite experienced with interacting with international students. And so my role in that team, or the orientation team, is to lead and help devise those programs, so webinars. So, and I, for example, in that session acted as the MC, liaising with our speakers and experts, and basically working and then pitching ideas to our manager within the city of Sydney to devise these programs for our community.
Yeah, that's actually really impressive. I think just in general, this all seems like really good work that you guys are doing. And I wanted to sort of follow that up with a bit of a broader question, actually. What are some international student-led or created initiatives or programs which sort of exist in, like, I guess, the world at large, or even, I guess, at a local level at Sydney, that do good work at a grassroots level that, for example, domestic students may not necessarily know about?
Sure. So I guess I'll start off with the international student or representative body in Australia, actually, because because they are pretty much led by international students, that is the Council for International Students Australia. I am very much acquainted with some of their leadership. So what they do is more of an advocacy, in more of an advocacy role. The second is OISH, the Overseas International Student Hub, which is led by an advocacy organization called the Sydney Alliance. So they are a group, an organization that spans, that collates together civil society groups, trade unions, and so many other community organizations to advocate and lobby for change within New South Wales and then the community as well. It's been an idea that's been running for a few years. It's just been launched since May 2021, and is basically a pilot program. After Investment New South Wales and then the state government granted a pilot funding totaling about $220,000, what OISH basically does is getting international students who are either affected or really interested in advocating for the community, for the international student community specifically, upskill those students in basically community organizing, where people share their stories and then build community power to get change and so on and so forth. OISH identify international student leaders who are capable, who are interested in community organizing into that space, and go from there. And they also offer, and they also are going to operate an international student mental health referral service as well, and also legal. So in terms of legal, they'll refer to the Redfern Legal Center. And then on the mental health side, that's a project that's still in development. But OISH, I guess, is still quite, it has just recently been launched, and I expect it to be an integral part of the international student community in the future.
Yeah, that's really good insight. Yeah, thanks for that. And I think especially because of the fact that the reason I sort of wanted to ask that question was because, especially in the media, especially kind of in a lot of rather problematic discourse around international students, there's this tendency to see them in a very monolithic and kind of dehumanizing way. They all think the same way. They all do the same thing. And I think in kind of maybe gaining a perspective on how international students support each other, create initiatives for each other, understand their differences in a way that brings them together. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in, I guess, centering international student voices, not having, I guess, dominant media bodies just come in and say, this is what happens, these are the things that happen, you know, this is the amount of money, say, that international students bring to Australian universities. I just wanted to sort of then get your thoughts on, you know, how do we move towards promoting international students, especially at a time where we don't really hear a lot from you guys?
Yeah, I think if we had a blueprint for that straight away, we probably wouldn't need to have these organizations in the beginning. But I guess so far, my approach and my thought on this very important question is getting this balance where we advocate for our students, for our community, but it comes from us as projecting power, because it is really easy. I remember attending this session on the Uluru Statement about how to center, how to promote and discuss this debate, say, around Indigenous sovereignty. So, you know, the law school just adopted the Uluru Statement, for example, but without patronizing the Indigenous community, basically, we have the word vulnerable. So the word, for example, vulnerable is very different from the word disadvantaged. So in the media context, disadvantage implies, yes, someone is lacking access to X, Y, and Z. Vulnerable implies, on the other hand, imports all of the elements of disadvantage, in addition to an extent of implying that there requires an external intervention from something, someone that is not from that community. So, for example, requiring the government's help, so on and so forth. And it's actually a very delicate, I guess, balance in that sense. So I guess moving it onto the nexus, and you touched on to this, Justin, so the idea pre-COVID in that dream of, you know, that rosy tinted glass of the sector. And when I say the sector, I mean the international education sector, have traditionally thought of the international student community as, for lack of a better word, cash cows. So the 40 billion narrative, 40 billion, 40 billion, and it's only going to increase and increase and increase. I remember attending a webinar recently. There was this phrase being used by one, and I will not disclose who said it, but they said international students are a very obedient cohort. And when I heard that, that was actually the portrayal that we really want to move away from. So basically pushing, so I guess my way of seeing it so far is to put that power, and that's why OISH and organizations like the Sydney Alliance wants to put power and projecting that voice from international students who not only face, but are taking control and advocating for their community from their own experiences. Because those stories projecting from those who are experiencing it will communicate to the larger community that we are acting on this because we identify that there's a gap, because a gap in policy, and we need to fix this in order to basically as an investment into people who might be here permanently, who might, you know, love someone here, who might start a business, work here, contribute in ways that are extra economic. Economic is one dimension, important dimension, but all that encompasses here, that will be, I guess, the message that we need to steer, and we are, you know, working to steer towards away from the economic picture, but to a whole international student contribution perspective.
So now I'm just going to almost backtrack and move forward at the same time, but I just want to go back to the role that you have at ISLA. And I just wanted to ask, obviously, advocacy and, you know, this kind of work isn't a smooth road. And so what are some of the challenges that you've encountered in your role as an ambassador? And how have you, I guess, worked towards trying to combat those?
The main difficulty that we've found from our research, and also how within the past 7 years of the program, because as our institutional knowledge accumulate, is that there's a perception, the perception that students have when they come here to Australia is very rosy. And therefore, when people get involved in these spaces and issues, it's reactive. It is highly reactive, as in, when danger comes, we jump, rather than before that, having awareness before that. Another way to put it is these topics tends to be boring. So information tends to be boring. So for example, students don't automatically, you know, because of academic life and wanting to enjoy life in Australia, won't automatically try and Google, for example, where do I seek legal advice? How do I avoid so and so forth? Because those information are, to an extent, rightfully, you should not have to worry about them until you face those problems. But actually, so that's probably our biggest obstacle, as in making those organizations, our partner organization services and their information related to them, relevant, personal, and approachable to students before they even, you know, have any issues. How we're dealing with this is that in planning our events, so I take three different events that I organized within the past few months within the ISLA program since it started. What we do is that within our team of six, we have, say, MCs and so on and so forth. We make it very fun. So our focus is pretty much very much on networking and information as second. So networking as in, and we, because the reason why we focused on networking so much is that we realized one of the things that that international students are interested in when they come to Australia, when we come to Australia, is we study for the sake of also trying to get a career. A lot of us are very much interested in trying to build a career, but have troubles navigating the system. Domestic students also face the same issue, but there are also other obstacles, more unique cultural, that affects us. So we center it around a fun way to network. So when, for example, when we have our speakers coming over, they'll speak for a short and they will discuss their career journeys. And we, as ESI ambassador, in the same session, we'll be speaking about our career journeys, talking about how we go from being school leavers and then into the careers that each of our experts and representatives from our partner or organization go through. Because what we realized was that students are actually really interested in those stories. And it is from them that information about our partner organization services being attached to that person, being attached to that personality, that people can see these days through Zoom screens, before it was in person, then people can actually attach and remember and have an impression about those services. So for example, I remember Sean Stimson from Redfern Legal Center, he discussed how he navigated his own law school experience and so on and so forth, and had hilarious stories to share about dress code and everything. And that made it actually very approachable. And we realized later on people return to our events because they are interested in the long run. So I guess that's how we, within my ISLA team and the whole team in general, because we have 32 ambassadors right now, my team of six, but we all use that same approach, making it very approachable and information second, because we believe in making it networking our students so that they find the services meaningful to them.
And I just want to now map that onto the law school. So what are some challenges that you see at play, and what are some of the steps that you think can be taken to tackle those problems?
So I guess mapping it out onto the law school, a lot of these same, challenges are reflected in life as an international student in the law school as well, because networking and then getting a foot in the door, so as the phrase goes, is almost like a mathematical problem that both international and domestic students have to wrangle for a long, 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 long time to come. In trying to tackle that, we organize those weekly online sessions, basically equipping students with information to really build their understanding, also to calibrate our expectations. So things that are, I guess, outside of formal rules and, you know, say you can go apply hundreds of different clerkships and so on and so forth. I'm not at the clerkship stage yet. And basically making it so that students, because first years coming in, have expectations a strong inclination that I'm going to be focused on this one job, becoming a solicitor. But I guess with us, it's also about what and demystify through those sessions. So inviting them to say career fairs and then offering advice on how to really to network, because the network should be very much interest-based. So as you know, we don't have, we have a JD cohort, but also we have an undergraduate cohort, but not every student, for example, will go into the legal profession. And that might actually be something that a lot of international students overlook. And so I guess, because I remember very well in the ISLA program, where our manager said, the degree that you come in might not be the same career that you go into in the future. Putting that idea to students, but also to promote, but also to demystify the legal profession by networking students through our space. So for example, our international officer, as you know, Cixi, posts a lot on the international group to build interest into the legal profession so that students can take it into their own hand, then network from there.
I think that brings me to the end of my questions. Is there anything that you wanted to maybe talk a little bit about to maybe raise on your own behalf?
So I think one thing I want to talk about is balancing the different commitments in life while in Australia as well. So I told you before, for example, I have balancing a part-time work, but also ISLA and the other committees at the same time. I think there's this, as you touched on that before, this idea of perfectionism, as in trying to get involved in so many things. I guess not so much my advice, but I guess I put a lot of emphasis on the word interest, because when when we, and this applies equally, I think, pretty much to domestic and international students, is that whatever your interest is, for example, if you're interested in trying to change the policy landscape and also in the social inclusion of international students, that's one way to go with it. So if someone is really interested in, say, for example, hacking or other, you know, any other of those, pursue them. Like, I guess, like, pursue them to the best of your to the best of your abilities, because in Sydney right now, huge city of 5 million people, offers a lot of opportunities, but we may really get lost in that orientation fair. And so I guess grounding it in those, take patience and time to go and get involved with them, and then build your friends and network from there. And just one final addition, and this is mainly my message to all international students out there: stay safe. And because particularly during this lockdown, if you are facing food difficulties, because whenever lockdown happens, holes run out of bread, holes run out of tissue papers, Studying New South Wales is running your food hub program, and the SRC as well. They'll give sign up, they'll give a free 15 kilogram box of food from Food Bank New South Wales. Second, if you have been asked to quarantine or self-isolate, please do apply to Studying New South Wales for a Centrelink lump sum payment to help you cope through 14 days of self-isolation.
Well, Khan, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast. I think all your insights are absolutely phenomenal. And I hope you have a wonderful semester break, and I hope you stay safe during this lockdown period.